Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview I did with Arthur Marx, part of the ensemble cast of Smokey Joe's Cafe, currently playing at Florida Studio Theater in Sarasota, Florida. And also, a little bit of an interview I did with the very talented musical director of that show. So hang on, here comes the show.
From an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. And it's always there, like a silent hug from nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time and my resources all on tap. Oh, I really can. Oh, I really can. Turn down.
Hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about living the life you were meant to live. It doesn't seem that that would be so difficult or so complicated. You would think that each of us would know instinctively what we were meant to do, should be doing, are capable of doing, are comfortable doing, are drawn to doing. But, in fact, in order to do that, we need to have been encouraged. Whatever it was that was spontaneous to us, natural to us, organic to us, needs to have been accepted by those important people around us. And unfortunately, more often than not, surprisingly, this is not the case. So often, the people who are important in our lives, our parents, our siblings, our teachers, our culture, our religious organizations, find fault with some of what we are spontaneously and naturally. And so we are discouraged as opposed to encouraged. Unaccepted as opposed to accepted, and made to feel that something about us is wrong and may even be dangerous. It may bring not only discouragement or the absence of acceptance, it may bring neglect, punishment, even abuse. And so we learn quite young to first to hide this, to pretend we are not whatever it is that the people around us on whom we depend don't want us to be. But we also develop the capacity to forget, to deny, to hide, even from ourselves, these qualities, tendencies, you may be aware that for a very long time it was thought that to be left-handed was to be driven by the devil. So a child who was naturally left-handed was not only discouraged, but was punished, was let in no uncertain terms to know that that was not all right. The hands were bound so that they couldn't be used, and children were punished for using their natural gift, their left hand, and forced to figure out how to use their right hand. And damage was done to the way the brains of such children worked. This is an example of a natural ability which was seen by the people who mattered to be bad, wrong, dangerous, ugly, something unattractive. And kids were able to change their brain chemistry. Not easily and not without damage, but they were able to do it and to forget that what they were was naturally left-handed. Well, this is true of any number of spontaneous, natural, organic abilities, talents, skills, sensitivities, sensibilities, all kinds of things that we come in with. And although I'm not talking here about talent or artistic ability, those of you who have been listening know, and I'm going to talk about this soon, that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And I do that because these people have somehow emerged into adulthood with what they came in with. And you'll hear in the interview today that Arthur Marks, whose interview I'm playing, is one such. The importance of being who you are and therefore living the life you were meant to live cannot be overstated. Certainly I cannot overstate it. And maybe it's appropriate to say here that while I believe what I am saying absolutely, and I am saying it as though it is the gospel truth, it is the truth according to Lynn. It is what I believe based on my, 30 plus years as a psychotherapist and observing the price that is paid by people who have been separated from, forced to deny what is natural to them. My practice, and I suspect the practice of most psychotherapists, is filled with people who come in saying, I want to stop doing this, or I haven't been able to do this and I want to start doing this. And with the belief that this is something they have to learn, something they have to be taught, something they have to develop. And over again, I have found that what's actually closer to the truth is that they already have the ability to do whatever it is that they're yearning to do. And they have the capacity to stop doing what they no longer want to do. But that ability, that capacity, that natural, that naturalness is hidden from them. And so, as I say in virtually every show, I believe that most of us are living out what I call our cover story. That is a version of the true self, but it's not the whole truth. Because some of our truth self had to be buried, hidden, pretended not to be there, denied in our childhood. But the good news is that while we can bury it, while we can forget it, while we can hide and deny it, we can't kill it. It's still there. And the way I talk about that is to say that these qualities, abilities, tendencies, sensibilities are hidden under cover. So while we are acting out, demonstrating our cover story, pretending this is all we are, not only to everyone else but to ourselves, undercover, waiting to be recovered, waiting to be rediscovered, waiting to be used, waiting to contribute to the life we were meant to live, are these qualities which we had to deny. and they are recoverable. However, they are not easily recoverable. It is not simply a question of, as you see in so many self-help books, you get it, you figure it out, you know it, and ipso facto, bingo, bango, you can have it. No. The reason that you buried it undercover was that it was going to bring anything from mild annoyance on up through abuse. And we don't forget that part either. Our brains are very, very clever, and they remember the price that we paid for doing this originally. And whenever we begin to try and recapture, our brains remember this price. And you may not be aware of it, but there'll be a flash on your internal, on your retina, of the look on the face of a parent who is horrified by the fact that you can make ugly noises, or that you talk back, or that you are very smart. You'd be amazed how many children are discouraged from being smart. That flash is enough to tell your brain, do something about this, and your brain drops a chemical in your bloodstream which tells you not to do it. Now, I talk at length in some shows about the impact of brain chemistry on our ability to change. I'm not going to be able to talk too much about that today because I have two interviews. Well, I have one whole interview and the snippet of another one to play for you. But you can get the book in which I talk about Cover Story and Undercover. You can learn about psychotherapy on the telephone, which is the only way I do it these days. You can email me and ask me questions if you have questions about brain chemistry, about Cover Story, about Undercover, about wanting to talk about therapy on the phone. You can get all of this, including the interview, the rest of the show that you're about to hear, and all of the shows that I have ever done, on my website, thelynnshow.com, THELYNNE, don't leave the Lynn, the E out of Lynn, SHOW, thelynnshow.com. You can get all of that up there. But as I said, today I am playing an interview with Arthur Marx. And Arthur Marx is an example of someone who came in with it. I'm not going to tell you much about this story. It so demonstrates the point that I want to make here about what it's like when a person is allowed, encouraged to be who they are. Arthur Marx is an extremely lucky guy. He had a mother who saw him and appreciated him and supported him. And so we are extraordinarily lucky to have an Arthur Marx in the universe, because he was allowed to develop all of these talents which are natural to him. This is an amazing story of a boy who just kept saying yes to every talent that seemed to occur to him. And at the moment, he is demonstrating all of these amazing talents on the stage at Florida Studio Theater in Sarasota, Florida, in Smokey Joe's Cafe, which I will talk about later. And also later, you will hear a little piece of an interview I did with the musical director of Smokey Joe's, talking about the show. That is Corinne Agalina. Here is the extraordinary and very sweet Arthur Marx. Okay, I am here with Arthur Marx in the FST dressing room.
Yes.
And they told me when they suggested that I interview you that yes. You are an FST favorite.
I am. Yes. I am. Yes. Not by my own doing, I don't think, but the audience.
Not by your own doing.
I think the audience is, for some odd reason, they like me.
Oh,
so.
And you, now, of course, that has nothing to do with you. Oh.
No, not at all.
Well, all right. We'll see.
Right.
Okay, all right. So, currently.
Yes.
You are in Smokey Joe's Cafe.
Smokey Joe's Cafe, yes.
All right,
yes.
Good. Now,
I don't know what they told you. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that the art with which you make your living is theater,
yes,
performing, mm-hmm, singing, dancing?
Singing, dancing, acting. I started my career in opera.
Oh my.
Yes. So I started my career in opera, but they found out, oh, he can dance? What?
Mm.
Oh, so then both worlds. I live my world in the life in the world of opera and also in the world of musical theater.
Okay, I want to hear all about that.
Yes.
I only ask one question.
Yes.
And it is.
Yes.
How did you find it? What was the very first moment in your life when you thought, oh, singing, good, oh, dancing, good, something?
Actually, I was 5 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
I was watching my mother sing in church. My mother is a former opera singer.
Ah.
And she got up to sing in church with no amplification anywhere to be found.
Wow.
And I sat there and I was marveled by the blast of sound that came from her without having any microphone near her. And it just grabbed me. I thought, that's what I want to do. And I remember looking around the room at other people watching her sing and how moved they were by it and captivated. And I thought, that's something that I want to do.
Yeah.
The world seems to stop when you open your mouth to this gift, you know, that you've been given. And
now, are you saying that you had heard her sing before but not ever in this...
Exactly. Right. I heard her sing around the house,
right,
and, you know, and...
It's just mommy singing.
Yes, exactly.
Right, right.
But it was the first time that I heard her sing to a captive audience, you know?
Yes, and you saw the response.
And I saw the response.
Yeah, yeah,
and it
yeah.
was watching the response of people just literally letting it wash over them. And it was a huge sound. It was so glorious. And I thought, wow, I want to do that.
Okay, so now this is a very powerful memory.
Mm-hmm,
okay,
very.
So what did you do?
I went home that day,
yeah,
and I tried to mimic her.
Oh my God.
And I literally would follow her around the house. I don't care what she was doing. And I would say, Mommy, was it like this? Nah. And I would try to make her sound. And the older I got, the more I realized that was the beginning for me, trying to emulate what my mother had already set forth.
Wow. That's amazing, and I've never heard that.
It was a very transformative process for me in that way that I remember so distinctly where it happened, when it happened, and how impactful it was.
Yeah, but the idea that you were then trying to duplicate it,
mm-hmm,
this is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what did she do with that?
I mean, and she just kept, she didn't want to discourage me because she knew that I was so hungry for it.
Yeah, yeah.
She would turn around and she's like, no, 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 sweetheart. It's like this. Mommy did it like this. And then I'd go, okay. I mean, literally, and then I'd run to my room and I'd close the door and I'd try it. And then when the next part came, I'd run back out and say, Mom, was it like this? And then I'd do more. And so we did this, I think for probably 4 days of just me doing that on and on, and to the point where she just said, Arthur, I have it on tape. She literally put the cassette in, and she'd do it, literally leave me in my room and let me do it.
That's amazing.
Absolutely. And then the next Sunday, for Youth Sunday, I then sang my first solo.
The next Sunday.
At five. I sang my first solo.
Oh my God.
Exactly.
Do you remember what it was?
I do. It was Jesus Wants Me for a Sunbeam. And people thought, who is this little man?
Right.
I mean, because I was 5 years old.
Right.
I was a little kid. I mean, I was short for my age.
Yes.
And people thought, he goes up there with such confidence.
Yeah.
Well, little did they know that I'd been driving my mother crazy for that.
Well, no, and you were doing your mother. I mean,
exactly.
You were right. You were
exactly.
Right.
So it seemed like there was an adult in a little bitty body.
Oh, my God.
And that literally started the trajectory of my career.
Well, okay, fine.
Yes.
So, all right, here we are at five, and you have you open.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right, okay. So what happened?
The response was fantastic.
Oh my God, you got it.
The response was fantastic. And when I actually looked over, my grandmother would always sit on this side of the congregation. And when I looked over and I saw tears rolling down my grandmother's face, I knew that I had done it.
Right, right.
I knew. I was like, if no one else is moved, I knew that she was.
Yes, right.
And And I may not have completely got it as a, you know what children don't always understand, but they see a visual.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then I go, well, that did something right.
Well, the thing that you saw that your mother could do,
mm-hmm.
you were doing
exactly.
it. Oh, my God.
Exactly.
Like that, right?
And exactly. And I knew that from that point on, music would always be a part of my life.
And
mm-hmm.
the impact on the audience.
Exactly.
Which is what we were talking about before,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
We have your mother to thank for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always give her credit.
Okay. All right. So, all right, you're five. Obviously, mm-hmm. you're not on the stage yet.
Right.
So, what happens? Do you...
I kept pursuing it. Then, about a year and a half later, my mom had the opportunity to do the opera Die Zauberflöte, the magic flute, mm-hmm. Mozart. And they were looking for the three little boys. There's three little boy sopranos in it. And the maestro asked my mother, would your son be interested in doing this? And my mom said, well, maybe. You know, she always didn't want to push me anywhere. She wanted it to be my decision. And she asked, and I said, sure, I like to audition.
You know? Yeah.
And I went in, and I remember the maestro really loving my pure soprano voice.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first professional job.
Oh,
I was
God.
One of the little boy sopranos.
And how old were you?
That was a year, so I was six and a half.
Oh my
six
God.
And a half.
Pretty amazing, huh?
Yeah, oh, it was incredible. First of all, to be in a room full of professional singers.
Right.
Singing in a different language, mind you.
Oh, right.
Because it was in German.
Oh my goodness.
So to listen to... people interpret something that I didn't understand, but I understood the feeling.
Did you have to sing in German?
Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
my
they
goodness.
Taught us in German. And it was so magical. It was so magical. Like, I just remember sitting there and just absorbing. I was like a little sponge.
Yeah, right.
You know? And it was just like everything. And I remember asking, I was the question kid. I was like, wait, I was one of those where it's like, good Lord, is there any more questions in you? I think I've answered everything possible,
right.
And I've come up with something else.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, and your mother was pleased.
Oh, she was extremely pleased. Extremely pleased. But she kept saying, she's like, now, you don't have to do this if you don't want to.
Oh, good mommy.
You know, she was. She really never was that stage mom where she pushed me or forced me into
Well, apparently she didn't have to.
No, because I was leading the charge.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So... Lessons, classes, something?
And then I started taking lessons. Actually, I started taking, I was a Suzuki kid. I started on the violin.
Yeah. Oh.
And then because everyone wanted to play the violin, then I decided I wanted to play the viola.
Oh.
Because
ooh.
I wanted to be special.
Special. I got it. Right.
And so there were 10 kids playing the violin, one playing the viola.
Of course. Right, okay.
And then it became, well, okay, if you're going to do this, and then my mom's like, well, if you really want to sing, then we should study. You should study.
Right.
And then I started taking voice lessons with her voice coach.
Oh, my goodness.
And just, I mean, it was little songs, little tunes that I was familiar with.
Right.
You know, and the train goes, you know,
right.
little bitty tunes like
right.
that. But it started my understanding of that there is... The tutelage was important.
Yeah, there's technique.
I mean, there's technique behind
right,
it, correctly.
Right.
And some people
it's
have...
It's not just that there's a natural thing, but there are ways in which you can produce it.
Exactly.
Right.
And knowing that just because you can doesn't mean you have to.
Mm.
It's always, you know, that you always have to choose that. And I learned that early
now
on.
Now, that's just because you can what?
Just because you can sing loud.
Yeah, that's what I thought you meant.
Just because you can,
right.
you know,
right.
you can command the room with your
right.
voice, doesn't mean that you have to.
No, and that there are times when you would want to choose.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so I understood that there are moments when you choose a forte.
Yes.
And it's even more impactful when you choose that forte and immediately use a piano.
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
my
yes,
goodness.
Yes.
That literally was goosebumps for me. It was like... Oh, I can be this, and I can be that. And they're still leaning forward.
Yes, and more, even more.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
And it's all about that, isn't it? It's
absolutely.
All about the impact.
Absolutely.
It's wonderful.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Okay, so now you have voice lessons,
mm-hmm.
and you have music lessons. You have viola lessons,
uh-huh.
right?
Yes.
Okay, and
yes.
so dance?
Dance. And then I actually started later than most for dance. I didn't start dancing until I was 13, which is late for a boy.
Yeah.
But... I watched Singing in the Rain, and I was in love love right. with Gene Kelly.
No kidding.
In love with him. The way he could command the point of his toe,
yes.
the extension, and how people would just gravitate to it. And I found it fascinating.
And when did you see Singing in the Rain?
I was probably about 12.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it. And I'd seen it before, but not through those eyes mm-hmm. of really understanding, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yes.
And then the animation along with it mm-hmm. drew me in. You know, where it was like, oh, wow, the colors change when he does his arm extension here. Oh, and I mean, it was life-altering, just like it was when I first sang that first note, watching my mom sing, and then I did it. The same thing happened when I watched him dance. I thought, oh, I've got to do that.
It's amazing how sensitive you were.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you saw a lot. I mean, most of the people who have watched that mm-hmm. haven't seen what you saw.
Right.
You know?
Right. But I think it also comes to, I'm an only child.
Ah.
And so I spent a lot of time creating these moments where I would play act with my stuffed animals.
Yes,
or
yes,
I'd
yes.
create these little yes. vignettes for myself that I would pretend a lot.
A lot.
So right. it was one of those moments where I was so in tune
yes.
to pretending
yeah.
to be something else that watching that was like, that's
wow.
the next best step, to
yeah.
pretend to be like this person.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, 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 I got it.
So.
Okay, so it took you 2 years to get around to dance class.
Right. right. yes, and it was because I was like, I don't know that we
Enough.
Can get you to all
right,
these places,
right, right.
all of you know.
right, right, right.
And I also love playing sports, so it was
oh.
like, there's only one of you, and then she would always
and
say,
"And there's only one
there's
of me."
One, yes,
right.
she would say, "There's only one of me,"
right, right.
which means that we can't be at all these places at one time.
Yeah,
so you're gonna have to start making some choices. That didn't really last.
No, I'm sure not. I'm sure
it
not.
Didn't. It didn't.
No.
But at least she did allow me to experience and to figure out where I really fit in,
mm-hmm.
and that really helped shape and mold me. And people to this day say, "You're a man of many hats." And I think it started back then.
Yes.
It really did. It was one of those things where, well, you need me to be this?
Alrighty then.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it really shaped and molded me through my career.
Okay. So 14,
uh-huh.
she says, okay, one more thing. And,
right.
and you go to dance class, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tap, jazz, ballet.
Tap, jazz,
something.
Ballet.
Everything.
All of the above.
All right, good.
All of the above.
Okay.
And like when I started the violin, wanted to be the only boy, was one of two,
oh, wow.
was one of two, and then I became one because the one kid moved away.
Oh my God.
And so I was the only boy in a class full of girls, which means I got used a lot.
Yes, right.
Because I was the one that they could, the lifts I had to demonstrate
right.
with the girls.
Right.
Well, if you only have
one boy. it's always you.
It's always me.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right, good. So now you're still only 14.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So high school?
High school. Then it became, well, I wanted to branch out. Well, if I can play viola, and I understand violin, and I'm taking piano lessons, well, then what else can I do? So the band teacher saw that I had a hunger for music, and I went with my cousin to marching band rehearsal. And he said, I need another trombone player. And I was sitting there just watching, and my cousin played the drums, and I said, I'll try it.
My God.
And he taught me literally every day after school, taught me how to play trombone. And he says, well, if you're going to do this, he said, well, then I want you the whole year. So I want you in symphonic band. And I was like, well, what would I play? And he's like, well, I do need a bassoon player.
You're kidding.
No. And I said, okay.
Oh,
and so I learned the bassoon. I mean, it's so bizarre when I look back on it,
right.
but it was so right. It was such a wonderful gift that I was given that people saw that I was willing and hungry for it
right.
and were willing to take me under their wing and teach me and give me that tutelage.
Well, what's so amazing to me is how easily you learned everything.
Well, I mean, it was, yeah. It, I mean, it was pretty easy.
Well,
it was pretty
fine.
Easy. But also, viola and bassoon are in the same clef. So I was familiar, and plus, since I played piano,
yeah.
then it was like, oh. Okay.
Well, I know, you're not starting from nothing.
Right. But it was also the fact that I was doing things that no one else was.
This is true, I know. And this is what it's all about for you.
It really was. From the beginning.
I know.
From the very
beginning. You're a one-of-a-kind guy.
I was. And my mom to this day says, if I would have had another child, if you would have had a brother or sister, she said, you probably wouldn't have been that way.
No, right.
But because I was an only child.
Right. You did everything.
I did everything.
That's right.
I did everything. And people used to call me Little Man. That was my nickname, Little Man. Because I was such, my mom would say, Arthur, you would walk in the room and they would say, there's my mother, they would call my mother's name, they would say Zelma, and her Little Man.
Oh my.
Because I carried myself so adult-like.
Yes, yeah.
You know, because I had this air about me, like, I'm all-knowing.
Yes.
You know? And so when adults would have conversations,
you would
participate in the middle of it. What? Who does that? What
right.
little kid does that? Who doesn't want to be outside playing and
it's like you came in grown up.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Fascinating.
It is. I look back on it now and I chuckle at it.
Well, it's to chuckle at, but it's also, it's remarkable. And I think she's right. It couldn't have happened if there were more children in the so it's just the way it was. It was meant
It was meant to be.
Yeah,
it
right.
It was totally meant
yeah,
to be.
Right. And you knew it very early
on.
Right. Okay, so high school, you imagine, it's so about music in high school. I mean,
absolutely.
You're playing all these instruments.
Absolutely. And I went to an Academy of Arts and Sciences.
Uh-huh.
So we were concentrated on the arts, but also the academics. So, but they nurtured us so beautifully, and really pushed us. You may think that you've excelled at this, but I'm going to take you a step
further. Yeah, right.
You know?
You think that's all there is?
Exactly. And that challenge, and I was hungry for the challenge.
Yeah, right.
I thought, well,
yes.
If you're going to put that in front of me, then you better believe I'm going to
succeed
it.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Oh,
watch
yeah.
This, right.
I always love meeting the challenges.
Yeah.
As well as the academics. They pushed us. They pushed us. Because this is just, I had a voice teacher that would, in high school that would say, what would happen if you woke up tomorrow morning and all of your abilities were gone? What would you do? And I would, that question would be like, well, I guess I would do this.
You know? Something else.
Yeah, I mean, it was always, but it was so like remarkable to think, oh, that is an option. What if I did wake up and I couldn't sing, or I couldn't play my instrument, or I couldn't dance?
You know, this is very interesting because I just came from an interview with a guy who's got an extraordinarily similar history to you. In the sense that he started singing at 2 and dancing and all that, all that stuff. And in his early 20s, on tour, he tore a ligament and couldn't do it. And there were 6 years of, oh my God, who am I now?
Right.
You know?
Right.
So you had, this is brilliant
for
this voice teacher to prepare.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. When she laid that there for me, I thought, you're right. So it is important because sometimes kids get so focused. We put such blinders on and we think, this is all I can do or all I'm going to do.
And all I want to do.
Or all I want to do.
It's who I am.
Exactly.
Right.
And to have someone say, just in case.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Right.
Be prepared. And so then, once I got through high school and moved into college, I went to a liberal arts college as well, where there were so many options. So I felt like, oh, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Right.
I will do the singing. I will do the dancing. I will play the instruments. But I also will focus on psychology and social work and statistics and, you know, all of those things, writing. Like, I can't believe sometimes when I look at the path that I was given, you know, because everything seemed to be laid out for me so wonderfully.
Right.
That it was like, oh, well, you've reached this, so this is your next
step. And here it comes, right.
Exactly.
Here it comes, right.
And it waved, I mean, I'm so grateful. I really am grateful.
Well, it's a gorgeous story. I mean, you know. Okay, all right, so I'm just curious. Have you thought of doing anything else?
Well, I did for a while, actually.
Well, okay, wait, then we'll get to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you get out of college,
and
you're a what major?
I was a social work major, a psychology major, and a music major, triple major.
Right. Well, you were preparing.
Right.
Right. Yes. Okay, good. All right. So then what did you do?
Soon as I left college, actually right before I left college, I got my first professional opera gig. And as soon as I left college, I started as a social worker, working with hospice and working with clients who have less life expectancy.
At 21?
At 21.
Where were you?
In Wichita, Kansas.
Wow.
And I remember thinking, music is something that I love, but then this social work passion opened up for me, and I would still perform. I would still do my love in that regard, but then this became a part of who I was as well, and I really focused on that. And so for a while there, I would put some of the gigs, I would turn down gigs because I was so immersed in this world. And then I performed for a maestro, and I remember telling him my story about being a social worker, and he says, "I don't want to discourage your that side of you." He said, "But you need to do this full time. You need to do it full time." He said, "Because you have such a gift that I can't believe you're not doing this every single day,
wow,
that you're not traveling the world." And I was like, "Okay." And I did. I remember going into my office to my boss, and I said, "I'm going to pursue this full time." And she knew me. She was a graduate, actually, of my undergrad. Mm-hmm. And she says, "I went to graduate school. Yeah.
Wait, you left that out.
Yeah. Before this, I went to graduate school to focus on music therapy.
Ah.
So I combined my world of music and therapy. And she said, "I'm surprised it took you this long."
Ah.
I mean, she really did. She's like, "I was waiting." She's like, every day I wake up and go, "Okay, look, this is going to be the day. He's going to come in and say goodbye."
Yeah,
you know? And then my career took off. And I went to Europe, and I performed in Germany, and Paris, and Rome, and traveled about with a quartet. And I learned so much about music and how it is the universal language.
Mm-hmm.
And how people respond to it, no matter what background you come from, what your story has been, what your path has been. But when music is in the room, everyone is on the same page.
Yeah.
And I really embrace that. To this very day, I firmly believe that music is that universal language that we can speak, and it speaks to everyone.
Okay, so how did you get all of this traveling around thing? You just auditioned?
I auditioned. The other maestros that I'd worked with in the past would volunteer.
Would call you, right.
"If you need a tenor, I've got one."
Right.
And they would call me and say, "We have this opportunity. Are you available?" And I would always make myself available.
Right. From the beginning, you were always saying yes.
Yes,
right,
exactly.
Right.
My mom said, "There was never an opportunity for you to say no because it wasn't a part of your vocabulary."
Yes, right. You couldn't have it. It wasn't there. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did you wind up here?
Well, Dennis Courtney, who is a very famous, in my mind, a very famous director, choreographer, had worked here several years. And Dennis and I had worked together many, many years together. We'd done, I think, 4 shows before I did my first show here at FST. And Dennis said, "They're wanting to do this show based on the music of the Rat Pack era, the 50s and 60s, and I would love to have you be a part of it." And I said, "Well, okay, do you know when it's going to happen?" He's like, "They're working on it right now. I'll let you know."
Right.
I said, "Well, I will keep myself available."
Oh, lovely.
And the call came. And I wound up here. And I auditioned for FST before, and they had tried to hire me for 2 other projects before that. But I had already had, the dates were, it was conflict of dates and for another shows that I was doing, and I couldn't make myself available. And then when That's Life came available, I said, "I'm there." And the rest, like you say,
that's not that long ago now.
No. 4 years.
Wow.
4 years.
Wow. Well, all right, great. So now you're in Smokey Joe's Cafe, right?
Absolutely.
And when does it open?
It opens the first week of November. We open November 1st, I believe, actually.
And it runs, do you remember?
Right now, we're scheduled to run through the middle of January, but there is a built-in extension, so we may go through the full month of January.
Okay,
yes.
You heard it here first.
Yes.
And I'm going to play some songs from Smokey Joe's.
Yes.
Oh, it's lovely. Okay, what else have you done here?
I've done just cabarets. I've only been in the cabaret space. Mm-hmm. So this is the first time that I get to be in the main space. Yeah, so I'm very excited.
How many people are in the...
There are 9 people in the cast. There's 5 guys and 4 women. In the cast.
So you're not the only one.
No. But the beautiful construction of Smokey Joe's Cafe is that if you picked one of the 9 out and said, do your own solo show,
right,
they would have that ability.
Oh, God.
It's literally 9 soloists coming together to create an ensemble.
That's great.
It's spectacular in its construction. Spectacular.
All right, so...
Yes.
So... Come.
Yes. Please come.
No, absolutely.
Please come. You will be, the music is something that you'll be very familiar with,
yeah,
but also you will be familiar with the stories that we tell and the paths that each character takes through it. And you go, oh, I remember when I had my first love. Or my first rejection.
Mm-hmm.
Or the moment where we got together and four guys got together and decided, we're going to be good friends from here to the end of our eternity, you know? I mean, it really is such a human story and journey that we take through Smokey Joe's Cafe.
It's lovely. Okay, so the other question that I ask is, having given a life, as you clearly have, to this, is there anything you would want to say about it?
I would say this, that music and being in the arts is one of the best things that has ever happened to me. And whether you can sing, whether you can dance, whether you can act, whether you want to be on stage or not, being able to allow music to be a transformative thing for you is a beautiful thing. Because we can't do, as performers, we can't do what we do if we didn't have an audience. You know, to appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love to look out and see people moved by what we get to do and what we cherish, because they're just as important as we are.
Well, and this is so interesting because it does seem as though that was virtually the very first thing that captured you.
Absolutely.
Was the impact that was you were having.
Exactly.
Right. And then that you could see that others were having.
Absolutely.
Right. So right there at 5,
mm-hmm,
you know, essentially you experienced, right?
Yes.
The fact that people could be moved by this.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And I think, you know, people say, oh, I can't see myself out of a wet paper bag.
Mm-hmm.
But you appreciate it.
Yes.
You appreciate music. Because when you are in your shower and you're by yourself and you're going,
right,
I would never put this out in public for anyone to hear. But that's an appreciation.
Right. The car.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Right.
When the windows, and people are walking by and they're going, wow, that person's really enjoying that song right now.
Right.
That is something that's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Because music moves us.
It moves us. It does.
You know? It really is something that I find that the more people realize that, the better off we're going to be as humans. I firmly believe it.
And you have dedicated a life to essentially trying to make that happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's a good place to stop. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This was fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
And as you can hear in this interview, Arthur Marx has become an extraordinary human, someone who took everything that he was given naturally and made the most of it. This is something not a lot of us can say. And of course, this is why I interview people like Arthur, and in this case, exactly like Arthur, because you can hear what it sounds like when from the beginning, life said yes to you. Yes, do that, be that, have that, explore that, develop that. And if you get that, which unfortunately so few of us get, what you get is an Arthur Marx, who is a bubbling over explosion of all of what he was meant to do. This is a man who's living the life he was meant to live, and all of us who are lucky enough to have gotten an opportunity to talk to and watch and observe him at work benefit from it. So now I'm going to play a song that Arthur does in the show. This is from the original cast album, but Arthur does an extraordinary job on this tune, and I wanted you to know what to listen for when you go to see him. So this is I Who Have Nothing from the original cast album of Smokey Joe's Cafe.
I who have nothing, I who am no one, adore you and want you so. I'm just a no one with nothing to give you but oh, I love you. You diamonds, bright, sparkling diamonds, but believe me,
just wait until you hear and see Arthur Marx do this. It's unbelievable. You see this small, you know, petite man who up until now has been doing comedy things. You know, he's been making faces and singing silly songs and dancing, and you know, you're amused by him, you're intrigued by him, you're delighted by him, and then he comes out and he does this piece which is heart-stopping, and it does in fact stop the show. So if this has not been enough to make you want to run right out and see Smokey Joe's Cafe at Florida Studio Theater, I was lucky enough to have an opportunity to interview Corinne Agalina, who is the musical director of the show. And I'm going to play a small piece of the interview I did with Corinne in which she talks about the show. And following that, I'm going to do a song from the show. So here, the musical director, who was lucky enough to work with all of these extraordinary talents, and those extraordinary talents lucky enough to work with the amazing Corinne Aguilina. So here she is.
How did you wind up here, and how did you get connected to Smokey Joe's?
Okay, I was here 3 years ago. I have no idea. James Ashford had called me. I probably had my resume out there. I don't know if I had sent it, whatever, but James Ashford had called me, and I couldn't come and couldn't come. Then I was free at Spelling Bee time, which was three years ago here. And I came to put the show up, and I just loved it here, and thank goodness they liked me, because they've asked me back many times. And this is the first time I just finished Summer Stock a few weeks ago. And I had done Smokey Joe's. They asked if I would put it up. I am grateful to be doing it again. It's a phenomenal show. It's just one tune after another. There's no break. It is just one exhilarating song after another. And whether, doesn't matter the generation you are from, young, middle age, older, you identify with this music. And it is wonderful. The cast is wonderful. Our director, who is also the choreographer, was in it, Kevin Morrow was in the show, one of the original Smokies alumni. And this is my third time putting the show up.
Wow.
I had done an abridged version in New York to go into the schools in Brooklyn, Bronx, and Manhattan. Very much in tune with reality today. Mm-hmm. It's one of those shows that has that never-ending message. This show is one exhilarating moment after another, and when you stop for a ballad, it's even more exhilarating.
Yeah, it's very powerful.
Yes, extremely powerful. And this cast, there's not one song where you go, well, let's get to the next song. Every song builds on the layer of it layers the song before. And it's just a combination between Richard and Kevin concluded with a cast that looks so much like they would have lived in the neighborhood. That's the first song, in the neighborhood. And they look like they all had grown up together. And when it ends, you can tell they had stayed connected.
Close to each other.
Even though their lives had separated, they intertwined. And you don't always see that message in a show like this. You think it's a review. Mm-hmm. No, this is a thread, a through line, beginning to end, which has been really solidified by our director choreographer and this cast and the choosing of them. And it's a wonderful, wonderful experience to be here.
And I am happy to be able to say that it is a wonderful, wonderful experience to be able to see this show. It is exactly what Corinne says. It's completely riveting. You are riveted every minute. The songs, you think, well, it can't get any better than this. And then it does. And not only is this a wonderful show, but the performers are mind-boggling. The energy, the capacity, the talent, my God, they're singing in harmony. They're moving virtually every minute. They have the capacity to demonstrate exuberance, happiness, joy, delight, and pathos, and pain, and sadness, and poignancy, and sexiness, and allure. I mean, they can do everything, and do it so well. I found myself thinking, my God, how do they keep this up? But they do. And I think that is a tribute not only to their individual talent. Each one of them is a standout. And of course, you're going to hear an interview with Arthur Marx, who is unbelievable, and he can do anything. And you will hear in this interview why that is, how he developed all of these remarkable skills, which they all have. But I'm particularly partial to Arthur because I got to talk to him at length. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to play the song that Corinne was referring to, In the Neighborhood, which is, as she said, how the show opens. This is the original cast album. This is not the Smokey Joe's actors, singers, dancers, performers. They didn't record that, but I wanted you to hear what some of the songs in the show sound like. So right now, here is In the Neighborhood.
Here's a picture of the neighborhood.
Here's the corner where we stood. Me in uniform, home on leave. Friends and family, Christmas Eve. Faded pictures in my scrapbook.
Just thought I'd take one more look
and recall when we were all
in the neighborhood.
I did pretty much everything I wanted to do in this show, but the end result of it is I have left myself virtually no time. So, as always, I need to thank the indomitable Josh Hackney. Just recently, I couldn't get my computer on. I did everything I could think of. Josh came, pushed the button, and the computer worked. I don't know. It's magic. But if you need magic with your computer or your recording or your electronics or anything, you need Josh. So, and you can get him the way you can get me, by going up on my website, thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow. And as always, I am hoping that you got something you can use from this show. I know you got something to enjoy, because the music is wonderful and Arthur's interviews is a kick. So I'm hoping that you got something that'll bring you back. Because next week, as always, I will be here, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you see my face and figure. Have folks seen better days? Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. See that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle
into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix